Hey friend, before we get to the episode, I have a free gift for you today. Do you want to start a podcast, but maybe you feel like it's probably too expensive, it's too confusing, and too time consuming? Well, you need my podcast equipment guide. It's the 5 things I could not record my podcast without, and they all cost less than $100. I'll talk to you with direct links of what to buy about the physical podcast equipment, podcasting softwares, hosting, and more all in this free guide. It's everything you need to feel ready to start a podcast today. So go get it at elizabethmccravey.com/record. Now, here's the episode. Hello, friends. I don't even know where to start with this one, but I am so excited to share this first story with you. I am a new mom again. I just had baby number 2 6 weeks ago as I'm recording this, and I want to share his birth story with you. If you're new here, welcome. I hope you enjoy hearing this birth story episode. And if you've been a listener a long time, I hope you enjoy this kind of pivot from our typical content. And thanks for allowing me to share just something more personal instead. So his name is Ethan Daniel McCravey. And if you have not seen his sweet baby self yet, I will share some photos in the blog with this episode. And I've shared on Instagram as well, but he is wonderful and amazing. And it has been fun doing this again, but with more experience as a second time mom. And it's also still exhausting, but somehow less exhausting than I actually remember it being with my first. So anyway, let's play the intro music and we'll get to the episode. Hey guys, I'm Elizabeth McCravey, an online educator for entrepreneurs, website designer, wife, boy mom, and your host for the Breakthrough Brand podcast, the show that's all about pulling back the curtain on how to actually build a successful business. I don't skim the surface around here. If you want to dive deep into the nitty-gritty details of what it takes to run a sustainable business that fits your unique lifestyle while standing out in a crowd, then you are in the right place. I created a multiple six-figure-a-year business in my early 20s, and now in my 30s, I'm still running that successful multiple six-figure-a-year business on just part-time hours now as a working mom. I'm here to share everything I've learned and everything I'm still learning because I believe that the keys to building a thriving business should never be a secret. Here you'll find episodes that are actionable, direct, and fun, like friends chatting business over coffee, and a fresh, honest take on the reality of being an entrepreneur. If you're ready to master online marketing, website design, personal branding, mindset, time management as a busy parent, scalable and passive income, and business strategy, then this is the podcast for you. It's time to build your breakthrough brand. Let's do this. All right. So again, I'm so excited to share this, but before I get into the birth story, I have 4 specific like disclaimer type things I want to say before we get to it. So first thing, my birth did not go according to my hopes again, which my first birth also did not. Some parts of it did this time, but the overarching thing is that like, yeah, according to my plans, it didn't go that way. In fact, a spoiler alert that you'll also see in the title of this episode, but this is the story of how I ended up with an unplanned C-section actually after having a vaginal delivery of my first. So I'll save the how and why of that C-section for later when we get to that part, but that's what happened. That's what this birth story is. And with that, I love my birth so much, C-section and all. I really do. I feel grateful for it. 4 weeks removed from it, which is when I outlined this. And then now 6 weeks, as I'm recording, you guys will hear this 7 weeks from when he was born. But big parts of it were still super disappointing at the time and definitely in those first few weeks after. But I just want to say that like I feel positively about it and I'm proof that you can have things in your birth not go according to plan, that you can experience disappointment and still love the experience and the story of it so very much. So those are the first 2 things I wanted to share, that it didn't go according to plan, but I still loved this birth. And third thing is that this is simply my story and my experience. So I hope you can listen without comparing to your own hopes and expectations with birth, because you might have a similar birth to mine, but experience it differently. Or you might be pregnant right now and be like, Elizabeth, your birth hopes are like so different than what I was hoping for. It might just be like completely unrelatable, and that's okay. I hope you can just hear it for what this is of me sharing my experience. And I think regardless of how you hope to birth your baby or how you ultimately birth your baby, birth is beautiful. And it's such a powerful thing as women when we get to talk about our birth stories. So that's the third thing. And the final thing I want to share, there's such a stigma with birth stories if it ends with a C-section or if it didn't go quote unquote according to plan, that you need like a disclaimer on it, a trigger warning, or like a don't listen to this if you don't want my same birth type of thing. And in birth stories, we glamorize the ones that are fast, that are according to plan, that are unmedicated, and things like that. And I'm just such an advocate, especially after having a really challenging and traumatic first birth, that like we need more people sharing their imperfect birth stories. Because even when some or most things go according to hopes and plans in birth, still not everything will, regardless of your birth. And still when things don't go according to plan, there's so much beauty in it. And I just think we need more stories like this shared. So especially more C-section stories, which we'll talk about later in the episode, but there's just not enough of that. So anyway, no trigger warning on this episode. It's a beautiful birth story. It's imperfect. It was not according to my plan. I wasn't planning to have a C-section, but it's a story I'm so satisfied with because I felt God's presence. And I felt so empowered and so strong, which you'll hear me talk about. And I also experienced like so many different things you can experience in birth between my first birth with Colin and the second birth with Ethan. I feel like I've kind of been through it all, which I really love that I've had like that experience. And ultimately, I ended up with a healthy and beautiful child, which I'm so grateful for. So anyway, thank you for holding space and caring enough to click play on this episode. And thanks for letting me share in this format with you. And I promise that this will be a wild ride of a story with ups and downs, with God's goodness just like evident throughout, and also with a precious baby at the end. And I think you'll really enjoy hearing it. So let's start with sharing birth hopes. So I promise I'll get to the actual birth soon, but I wanted to start by sharing the hopes because I think you need to know where I was coming from pre-labor. So with Colin, my first child, I actually recorded his birth story. It's episode 148 of this podcast, if you want to go back and listen to that one another time. But I was hoping and preparing and planning for an unmedicated birth at a birth center. And long story short, I risked out of the birth center after going past my due date, and that was really upsetting for me. And I had to get induced at a hospital where I was really not a good candidate for induction. Like I wasn't dilated or faced much. And so it was like, hey, this is probably not going to work great. But I ended up having a 44-hour labor with almost all the interventions. And yes, I mean 44 hours of active labor, not just 44 hours of time at the hospital. I had really bad back labor. I had Pitocin contractions that were really painful and in my back. While also not having an epidural until the very end, so like unmedicated Pitocin contractions. I almost had to get a C-section, but I ended up, and that was due to positioning, but I ended up with Colin being able to like move into the right position, which was such a cool part of that story if you go listen to that episode. And he was born vaginally with like just a few pushes at the end after being in labor like a super long time. So anyway, very long story short, that's what happened. But that's the backstory that I was coming into this birth with. And I was nervous about birth because of a lot of things about that experience. And I was making, like during my pregnancy, decisions about birth and where I was going to deliver and things like that based on that last experience. So this go around, I decided I still wanted to be with midwives because I really liked that experience last time, but at a hospital this time. I was like, I don't want to fool with birth centers, if I'm being honest. I don't want to fool with getting transferred and risked out of places. I felt the same way about the idea of a home birth. I'm like, let's just start at the hospital, but be with midwives. And I was actually with a different midwife group this go around and a different hospital as well. And if you are local to Nashville and you want to know what those places were and want like to hear my experience about it, message me. I'm happy to share with you. But I was in a different group this time. And I also had a really good experience with my epidural last time with Colin when I finally said at 40 hours in, like, let's do the epidural. It was a great experience. And that was what finally progressed my labor with him. So I also felt good about that, like about the idea of getting an epidural again. So I planned on that this time. But as you'll see, as you continue to hear the story, I did end up like changing my mind about the epidural. More on that later. But with this labor and delivery, my biggest prayer and my biggest hope and my biggest birth goal was not to go unmedicated. I actually wanted again to get the epidural, but instead to go into labor on my own without being induced, which again, that's why I said like early in this episode of like, hey, you might have had a completely different experience. Like I have friends who recently just got induced and like they wanted to get induced. So I get that. But that was like for me personally, what my goal and hope was to avoid an induction. And that was my prayer to God over and over again. Again, because my induction last time was not a great experience. It was pretty traumatic. And I also really wanted to know what contractions were like without Pitocin being what was causing them. And I also wanted that experience you hear women talk about of going into labor. You don't know when it's going to happen. You feel contractions. medication starting, and you labor at home before you go to the hospital. Like, that excited me so much and like was something I felt sad that I didn't have last time. So that was my biggest hope. And of course, most of all, like the biggest hope of all was a healthy baby and for me to be healthy too, in labor and delivery. So anyway, that was kind of where I was coming into things. So like, let's get to the story though. I want to start with early labor, and I will not share every little detail of this because my early labor was actually like a large part of the story, but I'm not going to share all the details. But I wrote a detailed version of my whole birth story that's like a 17 page paragraph format typed onto my computer that was just like for myself to process it and for our family and maybe for Ethan to read someday too. But a quick little side note here, I cannot recommend enough typing up your birth story just for yourself. You may never share it somewhere. Maybe you share it with your children later. Maybe you print it and put it in the baby book. But typing up your birth story was so therapeutic for me. Often those books you have where you're like tracking pregnancy and birth, I have books like that and they don't really leave much room for sharing the birth story. So I like personally typing it up, but it's really helpful. So if after you give birth, I highly recommend doing that, whether it's like recent for you or like, you know, a long time ago, typing up is great. But anyway, you guys are getting the shorter, more fun podcast version, but I do have like a super long version that is just for my family. But anyway, let's talk about the early labor stuff. So before my real labor actually happened, I had three notable times and some less notable times where I had early labor contractions. And these were more than just Braxton Hicks, which I also had during this pregnancy. But I'm talking three times where I literally thought to myself, this is it. This is the real thing. This is labor. I'm so excited. Let's make sure the bag's ready to go. And then it fizzles out, which is bizarre to me because with Colin's birth, I never had any contractions until I went to the hospital and got induced. Like not even Braxton Hicks, really. Like it was just so different to me that I had three notable times where I thought it was it and it wasn't this time. So just a really big difference there, but I'll keep this part short to save our time for real labor. But on the day before Valentine's Day, February 13th, I was 37 weeks and 2 days. And I had actually wrapped up my very last work meetings that day with Kara and Stacey. Shout out to both of you who will probably never see this episode. But I like wrapped up those meetings with them and I felt myself mentally go into maternity leave mode a little bit, even though I was not starting my leave yet because I actually was planning to basically work up until he was born just to help me like not be sitting around waiting. But I had all my work meetings done, all my coaching calls done, all my podcasts were recorded, all of those things were done. So I had the mental feeling of like, if he came now, it would be okay. So that night with that like going on in my mind, because again, guys, birth is so mental. But that night at 1 a.m., so like officially on Valentine's Day morning, I started having contractions in the night that were very intense and also very intensely in my back. They're around 8 to 12 minutes apart. They weren't very long. They felt really sporadic. They were super painful. I was very nauseous. I felt off, like unwell with the contractions. And ironically, when I actually went into labor, you know, a few weeks later, which we'll talk about, those contractions were way less painful than these. Like, I'm not kidding. Like the early labor contractions, those were better than these. These were just so intense. And yeah, I just felt really not well. And I didn't want to wake Adam up. And I also didn't want to tell my doula, Kristen, who you'll hear more about in the story, but I had a doula again this birth and she's a friend of mine and a birth doula. So that was cool. But I didn't want to message her. And I also didn't want to wake Adam because I like was not trusting myself that this was the real thing. And I also was praying that it wasn't because I felt so not ready. Again, I was only 37 weeks pregnant. I just like felt like I was starting to wrap up work, but still wasn't completely wrapped up. The birth bag was not ready to go. And it felt really unexpected to me because Colin was born at exactly 41 weeks. So the idea of like a whole month early felt insane. And I also had not done my freezer meal prep yet, which is something I did this time and loved doing the time with Colin as well. I did not have childcare figured out for Colin for when labor started. So I was like, Lord, don't let this be it. But also like, I'm kind of excited that my body is doing something. So that was me in the night. I did not go back to sleep after 1 a.m. and enter Valentine's Day. It was a weird Valentine's Day in our house. I had the contractions all night and they stopped around 9 a.m. after Colin went to preschool. And I had been awake again since 1 a.m. I was completely exhausted. I fell asleep on the sofa at like 8 a.m. and then woke up at 9 to nothing happening. And I was bummed, but also was like, because I was wanting labor to happen, even though I kind of didn't. It's like this weird feeling of like, you're like, oh my gosh, I want it to happen, but also like, I'm okay that it didn't. So I was kind of pumped, but also was like, okay, this hurts so bad and I'm so exhausted and just wanted a break. So the whole day though from there felt off. Like my appetite was weird. I was super nauseous. I was anxious. I was moody. I was tired. Adam was at work all day and I was at home all day and I did not work because I had no energy for it. And I was honestly just like in kind of a sour mood. So again, fun Valentine's Day. So then Adam got us Stony River takeout to have at home after Colin went to bed that night. No contractions all day. And I was just in a weird mood. So that was 37 weeks. And a lot of things happened over those next few weeks in our life. Like Adam got really bad food poisoning one night. And I was like, Lord, please don't let me go into labor tonight while my husband's sick with food poisoning. I also had a lot of sweet one-on-one time with Colin during that time because I really like the next week, about like 38 weeks and a half or so is when I like officially started my maternity leave from work. But we had a lot of great family time doing things like going to Chick-fil-A for breakfast, like and all being off work. I went and got two different prenatal massages. I did freezer meal prepping with my mother-in-law, Jan. My mom came and visited and we got our nails done. I did curb walking. I tried doing breast pumping to bring on labor. I did a lot of mile circuits and labor-inducing yoga videos from YouTube. I drank a lot of red raspberry leaf tea. Basically, like between this story and like when labor actually starts, I just did a lot of like, let's get this party started type of pre-labor work. All of which with Colin, I actually did not do until I was closer to 40 weeks pregnant. So I started all of that sooner this go around, which I think could actually impact how Ethan was born really close to 40 weeks and Colin was born at more at 41 weeks. So also being a second time mom, typically you go into labor sooner. Anyway, though, I felt so eager for him to come even before 40 weeks because I felt like things were more settled once I got them settled. And at the same time, though, I really appreciate this about the midwife group I was with, but I felt a good, like, no pressure approach from that midwife team, which I was so grateful for. Because with Colin, when I was at the birth center, I felt like the whole end of pregnancy, they were looking for reasons to induce me. Like I felt like a fearful, like fighting to get him to come before those induction dates. Cause they actually made me schedule an induction when I was only like 38 weeks pregnant. Cause they're like, we want to make sure if you have to get induced, that like it's available at the hospital and things like that. So anyway, I just felt more pressure of like, get the baby out before an induction. Cause again, I didn't want an induction that time either. But this time they actually had an opposite approach. So I had doctor's visits scheduled all the way up to 42 weeks pregnancy. Actually like the end of 42 weeks. So more like 43 weeks, just regular visits scheduled. And they did not make me schedule an induction on the calendar. So I did not feel that pressure of like being up against an induction, which I really appreciated. And I think actually could have been one of the things that helped me go into labor of my own, that I did not have that like fear. And some of you might hear that and think like, hey, I had a great induction. What's so bad about that experience? Or I hear that women, you know, love to get induced. I get all that. And again, just want to emphasize the reason I did not want to be induced was because I had a bad induction experience with Colin. It was traumatizing in many ways. And so this time I really wanted to just go into labor on my own. And even though I was ready to meet Ethan, hence my labor inducing efforts of like the tease, the curb walking, the mile circuit, all that, I was very content at the same time to wait until 42 weeks. Like I was going to wait until they made me get induced or told me I need to be induced for a medical reason or something like that. So anyway, fast forward to March 3rd, my official due date, 40 weeks pregnant. Adam, Colin, and I went to one of our favorite parks that morning to walk and let Colin play in the playground. And while we were on that walk, walking to the playground, pushing Colin in the stroller, I started having contractions. And I was like, yes, 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 I'm so excited. But I was also afraid to say something because I did not want to scare them away. That's how they felt at this point after having all these moments where like labor was starting and stopping. I was like, I don't want to scare them away. But eventually while we were at the playground, I told Adam and I did what they tell you to do of just trying to ignore them. But I was so excited because they kept going. Again, they're really mild at this point, hence why I'm just like living my life with my toddler at the playground. And they did not build an intensity, but they did stay consistent. Whether I was walking or sitting or doing anything, it was like the contractions were still coming and going. And they did that all day. They came and went all day. But again, not changing in intensity, but also not going away when I changed what I was doing. So I had that again, this is it energy. So I was really thrilled and thinking it was it. So I had basically a whole day of that. And then the next day, when I'm 40 and one day pregnant, they left, but then they came back and they left again. And this was another time I started to get frustrated. I used a contraction timer app to time them some. which is not a great idea when you're trying to like ignore them. So I did that some. I was also just in a bit of like a sour mood waiting at this point. I really wanted labor to stick. And I was at this point becoming really exhausted by all the start and stop contraction vibes that had been happening. I felt like I had nothing to do because I had gotten the birth bag ready. I also just didn't want to do other things. Like I had like, you know, I could clean out my pantry and things like that. There were definitely work projects I could have done, but I didn't want to do any of that because I was just like, I want the baby to come already. So I, in an effort to like distract myself and get out of the house, I went to Target that day. I walked around and shopped. The contractions were pretty intense when I was walking around Target, but then they stopped when I drove home. Adam had actually already started his paternity leave at this point. And so we were like home together all day and he wasn't working, which made it feel even more like, I want this just to stick. So anyway, it was kind of frustrating. I was restlessly waiting and also trying to trust God that all this start and stop stuff was my body working up to something real. My doula, Kristen, kept encouraging me that of like, hey, like your body is working. It is doing something. It is going to happen. And so much of birth is like the mental waiting and the mental working through contractions and like just resting in like what's happening. So I tried to do that that day, did a good job sometimes didn't. So anyway, I went to bed that night on March 4th, that same night as the Target outing with nothing happening, like contractions stopped at some point that day. And I was like, you know what? I'm okay with it. I feel like I actually got my mental space to like a patience around it. I went to bed early that night, which was important and good because I needed that. But I also did not eat a hearty dinner that night, which came back to bite me later when I actually went into labor and was not able to really eat. And was not having much of an appetite. So anyway, I would just say a quick little tip here. Once you're at the end of pregnancy, every night try to go to bed early and every dinner eat a really good dinner. Like keep yourself well fed because that was something I wish I would have done. I did the early bedtime, but not being well fed. So I woke up at around 12:30 a.m. on March 5th. Two contractions happening. So I went to bed that night, again, not well fed, woke up a few hours later to contractions happening. And I laid in bed a little bit before getting up. Again, I was like scared to scare them. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm awake. Something's happening, but like, please don't go away. But I really did know pretty quickly that they felt like the real thing. And my doula, Kristen, kept telling me I would know when it was the real thing after all my like false starts to labor and all those like contractions that were happening where they never like progressed. And she was so right. And something quickly I want to add here is like, in this pregnancy, or rather labor into pregnancy time, I felt like a first-time mom in so many ways because of getting induced last time and not experiencing any of this. Like I said, I did not experience Braxton Hicks last time. I did not experience early labor or prodromal labor or any of that kind of stuff. So when I'm like texting with Kristen about things, I'm like, I don't know if this is real labor. And also like, I know I've given birth before though, but like, I still don't know. So you can have had contractions before and still not be sure if it's real labor or not. Anyway though, this time I really did have a feeling of like, okay, I know this is the real thing. Kristen's right. I'm like feeling that this is it. Even just like in my body, the contractions weren't even necessarily that different. I just kind of like felt like this was it. So I texted Kristen. I'd have the time at 1:09 a.m. So after I'd waited like 40 minutes and I told her, Kristen, this is it. And I was so certain in my text to her too. Like when I reread that text, I'm like, yeah, I sound so certain after all the other times where I was really not sure. And I almost was like asking her like, hey, Kristen, like, do you think this is it? This time I was like, Kristen, this is it. And this was everything I had prayed for. Like y'all, I can like bring myself back to that moment downstairs in my bedroom. I felt so blessed. I was just so excited. I felt like I was getting that, like I went into labor on my own. All those times where it kept not being real and I was frustrated, it felt like so worth it. And I labored in our bedroom with, I woke Adam up at some point in that too, by the way, but I labored in our bedroom with Adam around getting me things, doing some counter pressure, letting me lean over him and also taking breaks to like pack up for the hospital and, you know, eat some breakfast and things like that. So that's what we did for a few hours. And I had my AirPods in. I usually just had one in so I could still hear Adam if needed. And I was listening to the Built to Birth Active Labor Meditation on YouTube, which I can link to that in the show notes for this episode. But I was listening to that through my iPad. And then we were using my phone to track contractions and like text with Kristen. But I loved those birth meditations. She has a bunch of different ones. They're all free on YouTube. You can also buy them. If you listen to YouTube, you're going to have to deal with ads, which I was fine with. But that was like what I listened to the majority of the time I was in labor, starting at this point at home and then continuing when I went to the hospital. But I would highly recommend having something like that to listen to. And back when it was just so different in my birth with Colin, I did not listen to anything like this because my contractions were just so painful. I was like just gritting and bearing them and never in the zone like this. So I feel like I got in the zone really well when I was at home. I was using my birth ball and kind of like swaying on it. I was doing sideline on our bed using my pregnancy pillow. I got in the shower for a while, which was amazing and so relaxing and really helped the contractions not feel like they were as intense. I walked up and down the stairs sideways per Christian's suggestion to try to help him drop into position more. Our room had all the lights off, but then like a soft light coming in from the closet and bathroom where we had the lights on in there. And it was just perfect. It was like, you know, I didn't have any like little twinkle lights or our bedroom was not very clean, but it still felt like so, so perfect. And again, like everything I wanted. So I had one moment where I was actually like leaning against the wall through a contraction, again, listening to my birth meditation where I was just like thanking God for answering my prayer. And I can get emotional talking about it. And again, that might sound so dramatic to some of you, like, Elizabeth, why did you care so much about this? But I really did. That was what I had prayed for and waited for. I'm getting emotional, but was labor starting on its own? I'm going to take a break. Hang on. Okay, tears wiped, nose blown. I'm back. But yes, after being induced unexpectedly calling, the whole laboring thing, I will say, was everything I'd hoped it would be. The laboring at home thing was. It was relaxing. It was exciting. It was powerful. And I was handling the contractions well, even though, you know, you'll hear they obviously got more intense by the time I got to the hospital and as things progressed. But like, I was handling the contractions well, which I just feel really proud of myself for because I did not handle them well in my labor with Colin. They were really challenging, but I was handling them well. And I kept just reminding myself that the pain was good pain and to embrace it versus like clenching up and bearing it. So that was my mindset. Like, I'm feeling this pain, but I'm embracing, I'm letting it happen. I think I did a good job of that. So I was really riding the wave of the contraction. That's something, you know, you hear in birth education that contractions are waves, like they start and they peak at the top. And then they, you know, start to become less intense and you get a little bit of a break. And I was riding the waves of the contraction and I'm not kidding y'all. I loved it. And I know it's like a hindsight thing. You might be thinking like, well, Elizabeth, in the moment you probably didn't love it because it was so painful, but I'm not kidding. I still loved it. And yes, it was painful, but I also just felt so empowered because I felt like I was working with my body versus my body, like working against me. And I'm like gritting and bearing it and suffering, which is honestly how I felt in my labor with Colin when I was having those back labor contractions that were brought on by Pitocin, but I did not have any pain medication like an epidural or any other kind of like nitrous oxide or anything. I was just like gritting and bearing those contractions and it was so painful and did not feel empowering. So that was really cool for me to feel like, okay, the contraction's coming on. Okay, I'm like breathing through it. I'm swaying. I'm like working with my body. It was amazing. So anyway, that's the highlight of my favorite part for me of my birth story was laboring at home. So my mother-in-law, Jan, she was our child care plan for Colin. She got there in the middle of the night, actually on her birthday. So her birthday is also March 5th. But she got there to be there when Colin woke up and to take care of him while we were at the hospital, however long that was going to end up being. And that was another answer to prayers in this first story, that labor started in the night and was not so fast that Jan could not make it there because she lives about 2.5 hours away. So we needed about at least 3 hours of like lead time for her to get to our house. And I also was hoping to go into labor in the middle of the night so I could just labor at peace with just Adam around and not Colin around, not because I don't think he's great to be around, but because I do not think he would have liked me laboring as a 2.5-year-old. Like, I don't think he would have enjoyed that. It would have been stressful for me to like manage taking care of him while also working through these contractions. So I just feel like that's like the best you can hope for when you already have a child is going into the labor in the middle of the night with enough time for your childcare to get there. So that was really awesome. And, you know, when we left, you know, Colin woke up later to his sweet Mimi being there, which he was so excited for. And that all worked out great. So anyway, while I was laboring at home though, you know, Jan got there, she settled herself in. She actually did not go back to sleep, which she had a long day. Thank you to my amazing mother-in-law, Jan, for that. But I was laboring up in the room still, drinking lots and lots and lots of water, but also trying to eat some food during that time and have some caffeine. I find that's something no one talks about, but I highly recommend a caffeine drink in early labor. I'm not saying like have so much caffeine it's going to affect your baby, but like you need that energy, especially if you go into labor in the middle of the night. You don't know how long you're going to be awake for. So I had a La Colombe drink. I think that's how you say that. I always never know if I'm pronouncing that right, but that drink made me feel the like good, my dad is present with me here moment, because that brand of coffee and those drinks before they were super trendy was like his always drinking those. He had a subscription to them and bought that coffee all the time. And that was his like go-to gift for me randomly. It was like surprising me and my sister with some of those La Colombe coffees. So that was special for me because I missed my dad so much. He passed away in 2020. And that was like another just random, like impactful part of my birth story was like, oh, I'm drinking this drink that like is like my dad's drink and getting my caffeine fix. So anyway, I had a bunch of other random things, whatever I could stomach to eat. I wish I had been able to stomach eating more or had eaten a better dinner the night before. And again, I was just chugging water and liquid IV and like eating what I could stomach because I knew I was going to get to a point where I would not be allowed to eat potentially and also where like I would not feel like it. So around 6 a.m., Kristen arrives, my doula, and we all leave for the hospital from there. She drove separately, but she still came to our house first because fun thing, she and I live like 10 minutes from each other. So that was just really easy for her to like come here first and like see how I was doing and see if maybe we needed to stay at home longer, but she felt like, nope, we need to go. And also Adam and I wanted to leave before Colin woke up to make that transition easier because I think if he had to say bye to us that morning, it would probably not have been that pretty. He would have been like, wait, don't go. And then my contractions are getting more intense. So I probably was not going to be in the best headspace for that. And we also wanted to leave before traffic got bad for school and commuter traffic because the car ride to the hospital was about 30 minutes. And the car ride was awesome because the roads were empty. The bumps and turns of the back road you take to get to the hospital from our house were tough on my contractions and my stomach. I tried to like just, you know, still be breathing through the contractions during that. I did not have my meditation during that time. And again, my contractions had really like picked up at this point. So the car ride was intense. I do remember that being like, whew, okay. And yeah, it was about 30 minutes. Kristen followed behind us. So I labored at home just to kind of give us a like time frame of where things are for about 5.5 hours, which did not feel like that long. Looking back, I'm like, wait, that was 5.5 hours. It did not feel that long. Time stood still in some ways. I feel like that's such a real thing in labor. Like you can be in labor, you know, with Colin, it was 44 hours. It felt that way in some senses, but also not in other senses. But that 5.5 hours of laboring at home felt more like 2 hours in my head. Like it did not feel that long. So then we got to the hospital and went to triage, and the triage, that was a new experience for me. Because when you're induced, you don't go through triage. You just go check in and they give you a room and all that. So I didn't really know what to expect there, but it was not a good experience, which I feel like for most women, triage is not a great experience. That was my first bad experience in this particular labor, but they expected me, which again, I know this is normal, but I'm like, why is this a thing? But they expected me as a woman in labor who was, you know, I was having, my contractions were pretty close together at this point and pretty intense, but they were expecting me to sit down in a chair and talk into this tiny microphone. There was a glass wall like separating me from the person behind the desk. So I had this microphone to talk into. And they were asking me questions like, what's your pharmacy? What's your social? What's your home address? And I'm like, who cares right now? Like, save that for postpartum. I know they need to like get your name and info to check you in, but it was weird because I'm like, do y'all not have some of that from the midwife team? Like, I don't know. It was just weird. So I got really annoyed. It was probably a little feisty. And Adam ended up sitting in that chair and doing all the intake stuff for me while Kristen and I went and stood in like the waiting room area and we're like working together through my contractions. So that part was at least 30 minutes of like waiting and like answering questions, getting insurance, all that kind of stuff. And then I got to go back to actual triage, which is just like one big room with curtains dividing up all the areas. So there were other women there who were also getting checked in. I can like hear their conversations, hear them in labor. They hear me in labor. It was kind of weird. I did not like the triage experience. And I commented multiple times during this just to like, again, take you through the real birth story. I told Kristen and Adam, I'm like, no wonder people have home births because it was such a whiplash for me moving from my beautiful, calm bedroom to this bright, large room where I heard another woman crying and screaming and it took forever. And again, I know not everyone's experience is like that, but I did not like that part. And it did make me be like, okay, I get the appeal of home births right now because that was so pleasant at home. And I felt like I was progressing really well. And now I felt like so like out of the zone. And anyway, it felt like it took forever, but it actually was probably just more like an hour, and they like watched my contractions. They hooked me up to monitoring. They checked my dilation. They asked me like a million questions. The nurse did. She was really nice and everything. So that wasn't the problem. It was just like, I'm like, I'm ready to get settled somewhere. And I'm like, I didn't realize this would take this long. And I was dilated. I was dilated to 4 centimeters at this point. And my contractions looked good and were happening. And so they knew they were going to put me in a room. I was just ready to get settled. So that took a while. Again, I know some people have said triage can last like 2 hours though or more. So mine was actually not that long, but it felt long to me because I was wanting to get settled. So we finally got to go check into our labor and delivery room at like 8:10 a.m. We were in the hospital room. And then by 9:10, I was all, and I have this like timestamps from photos Kristen took. So that's how I know these exact times. But by 9:10, I was all hooked up to everything they needed. And I was back in my own clothes. And again, it just felt so long to really feel checked in. So in reality, from having arrived at the hospital, from me feeling like settled, it was about 2.5 hours. And you know, I'm having contractions this whole time and not really getting to listen to my stuff and be in the zone. So that's why it probably felt long to me. And it was not fun working through contractions with all the distractions of people asking me questions and hooking me up to things and trying to get like my bag unpacked. So again, that's why I commented that like a home birth can sound nice if that had been possible, because you just get to stay in one place. And so I'm like, I get that. So anyway, that was all that, the getting checked in. And then from there, I did my first round of the GBS antibiotic group B strep because I was group B strep positive. I also was group B strep positive with Colin. So they give you an antibiotic. You can opt not to get it, but I opted to get it with both of my deliveries during labor. They give you an antibiotic to help really prevent the baby from getting it when they go through the birth canal is the idea. So I got that antibiotic, then got to be like unhooked from the IV and I just had a hep block. And I was really able to just work through contractions on my own with Adam and Kristen supporting and helping a lot. During that time, Kristen would do counter pressure, like basically every contraction. I'm like, she was so tired probably. And I often was like leaning over Adam. And I told Kristen this after the fact, I'm like, I probably wore you out because for every contraction, I was like, counter pressure, please. Like it felt so essential to me at this point. And, you know, when I was at home, Adam actually wasn't really doing counter pressure much because I felt like they weren't as intense yet, right? But by the time I got to the hospital, they were more intense at the counter pressure on, you know, and that's where the doula or someone else is like putting pressure with both hands on your back hips. It felt so essential. I also, it's just kind of a little interesting tidbit here. I had continuous monitoring, but with Bluetooth monitoring. So I wasn't hooked up to anything, but through this Bluetooth monitoring on my stomach, they were monitoring my contractions and his heart rate the whole time. So I could still move around as much as I want to, but the continuous monitoring was happening. And the midwife team told me like, hey, you can take that off if you want to. If you don't want to have the continuous monitoring, you just like literally unhook it from your stomach. And I kind of forgot about it first because I feel like that's a thing you often hear is like, don't get continuous monitoring. Like I ultimately opted though to just leave it on, but it was actually kind of nice because the screen in our room told us when a contraction was coming and happening before I felt it, which made me realize, you know, at home when I was tracking my contractions in the contraction app, I thought all my contractions were only like 30, maybe 40 seconds. Like that's what I was putting in the app. And so, you know, even when I was texting Kristen about like, okay, they're closer together, but like they're only like 30 seconds long. Sometimes 25 seconds, sometimes 45, but not very long. And I realized by having myself hooked up to this monitoring that my contractions actually were longer. I was just not feeling the whole contraction, which was so cool for me to discover. And again, just back on how like this birth like was redemptive for me in so many ways, that was a powerful moment for me because of Colin's birth being so difficult. I told myself after that, like, man, I just don't have a high pain tolerance. I just assumed. I've actually never broken any bones except for my tailbone. So I don't have like a lot of experience with, I never had a surgery before my C-section. Like I just don't have a lot of experience with stuff like that. So I assumed because Colin's birth kicked my butt that I didn't have a high pain tolerance. And every contraction during that birth with the Pitocin felt so challenging. But this time I was managing contractions well. I wasn't even feeling them at the beginning and there really was a wave to them. And I had the nurses multiple times say like, wow, you're handling this so well. You're so in the zone. Like that encouragement was really helpful for me from them and from Adam and Kristen. But there really was like a wave to the contractions. So that analogy of like the ocean wave really made sense to me during this labor. But with my Pitocin contractions previously, those were more like feeling nothing, boom, it's here and it's long and it's intense and then boom, it's over. So it's very different. And again, I'm grateful to have gotten to experience the unmedicated, naturally occurring contractions because it was cool to get in a rhythm with my body and like see it work and also to like fully understand now what people mean when they say that like the Pitocin contractions feel a lot different. So I've experienced both. And now I know how those are different. So from here, for a while, things get fuzzy because in reality, I was just laboring with Adam and Kristen in the room for a long time. I never had any idea what the heck the time was or how long I'd been there. I did not really care. I was just in the zone doing my thing with my AirPods in, listening to my meditation while they were both helping me. And I can't even remember well when all the dilation checks I had were, but I know, you know, triage, I was 4 centimeters dilated. I had 2 more dilation checks during labor after triage. But I don't even remember when they were or when the second was and things like that. But to tell you a little bit about like this time during labor where everything just felt more fluid and I did not know, you know, how far along things were and things like that. So at one point I started having more back labor than labor in my stomach, which was also true a little bit when I was in early labor at home. It kind of went back and forth between back and front more than I think is normal. But back labor was what I had the whole time with Colin, like literally the whole time. I did not even realize labor like could feel differently than that until it did near the very end, right before I started pushing. But this time it was like, you know, it had come on randomly and we weren't loving that because it felt like it was pointing to a positioning issue. So to help, our nurse, who I really liked, she had me lay in the bed and do these various positions with a peanut ball while holding very still with the peanut ball in these various positions. And I'll say, these positions were all incredibly painful and I held each one on each side for about 20 minutes. So it was over an hour of this, of me getting into position, holding for 20 minutes, and she would get me there and then leave me with Adam and Kristen and then come back later in about 20 minutes. So this was around 11:30 a.m. And I really didn't like this. I wanted to stop. I even asked to stop early. I feel like my instincts were telling me like, you don't like doing these positions. They made the contractions feel much worse because again, I was not able to just move. I also did not have any pain medication, no epidural or anything. I was unmedicated. And so looking back though, just to tell you a little bit about this part, I have wondered if this is what caused my birth to need to change to a C-section later. So I'm sharing the story in the order I experienced it. So I'll hold off on sharing why exactly I ended up having a C-section, but the whole holding positions thing could have done something, in my opinion, that could have contributed to it. So just remember that and make note of that part happening. So that was one thing during this time. Another thing, I did get in the shower for a while, which again, not sure exactly when, it all just runs together, but it was amazing. So therapeutic. I get why women say water is nature's epidural. I felt that. I eventually did get out because my contraction slowed so much while I was in the shower, but I wanted to stay in really badly because it felt so good. And while I was in the shower, Kristen tried to help me push to break my water bag when contractions were happening. That's like a kind of technique you can do that she was helping me with, because my water breaking certainly would have helped move things along. You would think it would, at least. So I tried doing that with her coaching, but it didn't work. And also just during this time in labor, the nurses multiple times asked me about breaking my water medically. Like if I wanted to do that, I actually did have that done in my labor with Colin, but I declined every time. And I had my own reasons for declining. Basically, it was that I wanted less interventions at this point. I also knew that with being GBS positive, getting your water broken can make things need to speed up a lot more because you become on that clock and you're already kind of on a clock a little bit with GBS. So anyway, I also did not want my contractions to get more painful because they were already a lot to manage. I was still unmedicated. I was like, I don't really want my water broken too. That just feels like I'd rather like wait till I'm farther along to break. So this was a blessing in disguise though, that it did not break in the shower and that it never broke actually. Again, when we hear the C-section part, you'll see why, but that's just a little note there. Okay, so about 1:45 p.m., again, I'm just in the zone. Contractions are getting more intense. I also was at the point where, like, remember I said I was going to get an epidural, right? Like, that was something I decided I was going to do in this layer, but I hadn't had one yet. So it's getting to the point where it's like, hey, you're getting far enough along that, like, if you're going to get an epidural, you need to get one now. But I started feeling undecided about it. So anyway, around 1:45 p.m., Adam showed me this precious video on his phone that he made with Colin to encourage me in labor because I was feeling the contractions. I would say I was still managing them well overall, but at this point there were plenty that were taking my breath away that left me screaming some. Like I was not handling all of them well and they were getting a lot more close together too. So this video though was exactly what I needed at this time. It was so precious. And guys, if you're having a later child, ask your spouse to do this for you, like to make a video with your other children or even other family members encouraging you. It was such a sweet surprise, but it was basically Adam saying to Colin, tell mama this, tell mama that. but the video ended up saying, being calling saying, good luck in labor, mama. You're doing so amazing. I'm so proud of you. I'm grateful to be your son and I love you so much. So that was the gist of what he said. And I watched this video multiple times. Kristen actually took a video of like Adam with his arms wrapped around me, showing me the phone and me just like crying while watching it. But yeah, anyway, that's just a little like tip. Such a great thing. Can be a super big encourager while you're in labor. And again, I think it'd be really powerful too if it was a video with family members you love as a surprise or friends, but especially your other children. Like it was just like seeing Sweet calling because I was missing him. But like seeing him saying that was just really, really sweet. So like I said, at this time, I was like having to decide though about getting an epidural or not because I was getting to the point where it could become too late to get one. And my doula, Kristen, and our nurse kind of kept telling me this, like, hey, do you say you want to get an epidural or do you still want to get one? Because I did have that as part of my birth plan. And crazy enough, I thought I had decided that like I'm 100% getting an epidural. But in the moment, I felt so conflicted about it. And I seriously could not decide, even though I'd previously said I'm getting one. And the reason I became undecided about this was because things were going really well, unmedicated. So I was getting tired. But again, I was handling contractions well. I was progressing and dilating. So it felt kind of like, hey, like I've done it this long. At this point, I'd been in labor probably like 13 hours, maybe closer to 14, but I was handling it well. But I was also like tired and I was ready for the relief of labor ending. But obviously that's not how labor works. We don't know when it's going to end. And dilation and effacement and station and all that kind of stuff, they check at cervical exams. You know, they tell us some things, but not everything. How our contractions are going tell us some things, but not everything. But I was over here being like, I want to know everything. I want to know exactly how much longer labor is going to last if I keep doing what I'm doing unmedicated. And if it wasn't going to be much more time, if it was going to be, say, you know, just a few more hours, I'm like, yeah, I can do that on Medicaid the rest of the way. But if you told me it's like 10 more hours, I'm like, nope, give me the epidural now. I'm ready for it. Because again, the epidural was a great experience for me in my first birth. So anyway, at that point though, looking back, it's so crazy to me. I think about how I ended up having a C-section, but I thought at this moment, everything's going great. I'm making the decision right now between unmedicated vaginal birth and a medicated vaginal birth. That was it. That's my decision. Later, I realized I never really had a decision to make. It was never going to be a vaginal delivery. It was always going to be a C-section. But at this time, I was so conflicted. And I was also angry at myself a little bit. And I expressed this to Adam and Kristen of like, why didn't I decide this sooner? Like, I thought I decided this sooner, but clearly I didn't. This is not the kind of decision I want to be making. I kind of wanted them to make it for me, but they wouldn't. I wanted the nurse to make it for me, but she wouldn't. And I was telling both of them, like, again, just this internal conflict, which I'm sure many of you guys have experienced about like going on Medicaid or getting the epidural. But I was like, you know what? I'm not going to get a gold star for going on Medicaid. Who really cares? But then I also had this other conflicting thought of like, this might be my last birth. I'm not sure if we'll have more children. And I didn't get this in my first birth, but it was one of my desires. But then I also would go back and say, but I always said I was going to get an epidural this time. So why does it feel so hard to just like send that doctor in and get it? So again, I was so conflicted and I was in a lot of pain and I was just like wanting someone to tell me how much longer, and then I wanted to make the decision. So basically, at this point, I decided to get another cervical exam with the hopes that that information would help me decide whether or not to get an epidural. Because again, I know dilation, effacement, and station don't tell you everything, but I'm like, so tell me something, give me a little bit of an idea of how much longer. So this time, I was, what they said was between 7 and 8 centimeters dilated, so kind of like that was the answer, and 90% effaced, the highest effacement could be is 100. And then though, a still -2 station, which means the baby was not moving down, not descending into my pelvis, but I was still dilating a lot, which is kind of odd. And again, I'm not a doctor or nurse, obviously. I'm a web designer and online course creator, but that's my understanding of it is that like the -2 station was like the thing that like everything else, the 7-8 centimeters and 90% of the face was normal, but the -2 is like, wait, what's up with that? And at this point so far, my cervical exams had all been by nurses. Later I find out a midwife should have come in there and checked on me at some point, but they had not because they were having a really busy day. And they saw me as someone who was handling contractions well, had birth support. So they weren't really checking on me. So the nurse though started to question his position. And at this point, no one had ever questioned whether or not he was head down. I've been told he was head down the whole end of my pregnancy. Every appointment, I would get belly mapping where they're feeling around in your stomach, and every midwife appointment they'd feel around, they'd say, look, there's his head low, low, low in your stomach. I never got any ultrasounds at the end of pregnancy because That's not like normal practice at this midwife group. I also did not have an ultrasound at triage. So I only had two ultrasounds my whole pregnancy, the early one and then the one that they find out the gender at. So that's all I'd had. But every week they were feeling where his head was. And then I also had cervical exams at the end of pregnancy where they also were feeling where his head was, right? So everyone was always just like, he's head down. I actually questioned his positioning late in pregnancy, not that he was in head down, but just like, is this a good position? Because the person I got my first prenatal massage from, she used to be a midwife and is like a body worker and knows a lot about positioning, but she felt around to figure out like what position he was in. And she told me he may be in the OP position. So she kind of sensed something was wrong. But she actually, it's just so fascinating. She didn't question him being head down either, because I told her every appointment, that was the review. So I will say though, real quick, at 38 and 39 weeks pregnant, I got two cervical exams, like I said, and I opted for those. They actually don't make you do those or anything, but I was like, I want to know how dilated I am. And at both of those exams, I was between 2 and 3 centimeters dilated. And those were both by two different midwives. But one thing that they both said was that I had a bulging bag of waters, which sounds funny. But that basically meant that they felt like the baby like felt really low, basically. Like the water bag was really good, not nurse or doctor, but that was my understanding. And at one of those appointments when I was 39 weeks, actually, I wanted to get a membrane sweep to like help move things along. And the midwife did not do it because she was worried she was going to break my water because of that bulging bag of water thing. So now I wonder, was that bulging of my waters actually a foot the whole time? Or something else wrong with the positioning causing them to just think things were lower than they were? So anyway, back to the story. I'm just pointing out no one had questioned the position. I had been laboring at this point for about 14, 13 hours, maybe 15. I don't know. I'll look at my notes. But like I've been laboring a while and no one had said anything about the position yet. So back to the story. The nurse did the cervical exam and then she was like, something feels off. I want a midwife's opinion because I'm not sure what I'm feeling here. She was actually at first thinking that it was a head with a hand over the head, which is a somewhat common but not great position for the baby to be in. And so then the midwife comes in and she tells me that she wants to do what's called an aggressive cervical exam to assess his position. Sounds fun, right? I still do not have an epidural at this point, so I'm 100% unmedicated. And this is finally when someone tried to give me advice about getting an epidural. So the midwife was actually kind of suggesting I get an epidural before this exam because it's extremely painful, apparently. And I would need to be able to sit still through it because they're like, again, you heard the term aggressive. You can kind of get what that means, but it's like probably gonna be really painful. And again, I was between 7 and 8 centimeters dilated at this point. My contractions really close together. And so they need me to be able to sit still. And because of my dilation at this point, I was going to get an epidural. It was like the last chance to get one. So at this point too, my sweet friend Kristen and doula, she also suggests I get the epidural. And again, that was the first time anyone really gave me a suggestion in my big debate of epidural or unmedicated. And Kristen had also had to have this kind of vaginal exam with her fourth baby at her home birth, turned hospital delivery at the end. And she said it was really, really unpleasant, unmedicated, and like really horrible. So I'm able to like hear my friend's opinion and be like, okay. So I said, okay, let's do it. And at that point, the decision finally felt easy. I was like, I think I just needed like clear reasoning in my head to get it and a little push from someone because I really was very exhausted at this point. As I said, a lot of hours in labor and I was having like some decision fatigue around it and like doubting my own original decision that I put an epidural in my birth plan. So anyway, I feel like I needed that help. And thank you to Kristen and the midwife for helping with that. Also, just a side note, if you're considering ever having a friend as your birth doula, like someone who knows you outside of that pregnant woman and doula relationship, highly recommend it because I think it was really cool having someone who like knew me outside of birth there. So just a side note on that. I've had people ask me about that. Like, isn't it weird though? Like having had your friend be there through like all of it and seeing like the very intensity of birth. And I would say it was not weird. It was really awesome actually. Okay. So I got the epidural. So I got the epidural at around 3:15 p.m. That was 15 hours after labor had started. So I did 15-hour unmedicated labor. And this is where the birth really starts to feel like a different birth story. So it's also not a fun part of the birth story. And I know so many women who are very much interested in the natural and unmedicated birth world, which I've read and listened and learned from so much of that. We're often taught to be seriously afraid of epidurals because you hear horror stories about them. So I feel reluctant to share this because I don't want to horrify people more. The epidural actually went fine, but my experience with it wasn't great. And when I got the epidural with Colin's birth, it was not painful getting it put in. And it was honestly really pleasant. And I still remember the two doctors who were in the room doing it, and they were really nice. And when they like did the spinal injection for it, I literally commented to them like, wait, oh, it's already done, because it was that chill. And I was expecting it to be so much worse. This time it did not feel chill. So the, you know, I told them I want the epidural. The doctor's like going to come soon. He walks in and was immediately just really rude, which he ended up being nice later. I hate even sharing about someone being rude on the podcast. Obviously don't even know what his name was to share it, but he came in, he told us that our room smelled bad because we had essential oils diffusing, and he literally used the door and like a fan type, like the paperwork he was holding to try to air out the room. And then he put a surgical mask back on to block the smells that he was not wearing before. He also said it was too dark in there, and he immediately turned on all the bright lights, so like disturbing the peaceful environment we had created. And it was really frustrating to me. We were all kind of shocked by it. Even the nurse was shocked. So I immediately felt like, I don't really trust you or like you very much. Yay, you're about to do this like spinal injection for me. Awesome way for us to start this relationship. So at this point too, just to continue, knew that it did not go great, I asked him about a walking epidural, which I'll tell you guys what that is if you haven't heard of it. But I asked him, like, I'd like to get a walking epidural. You know, I told him that. And he made fun of me. And he said that that's not a thing. Where did you hear that? So that was fun to be made fun of when I was having intense contractions, trying to get some pain relief, and about to have an aggressive vaginal exam. Like, it's like, cool, this is great. This is exactly what I needed. So I told him, when he's like, walking epidural, what is that? I'm like, I had one my first birth. I told him the hospital it was at. I described it. He did not believe me. I tried to explain it more. He just kept telling me like I was wrong. And I know I wasn't wrong. Like, full stop. I was just like so frustrated, like arguing with someone. We weren't arguing, but I like quit trying to defend my position. I was just like, whatever, maybe he'll Google this later and realize I'm right. But after this experience, actually, I read up on walking epidurals versus regular epidurals, because I was like, I need to like see some more information about this besides my own experience. And yes, like reading about it, I had a walking epidural with Colin and a classic continuous epidural in this birth with Ethan. And if you're wondering what a walking epidural is, here's a quick tidbit from the Very Well Family website. I will link to in the show notes if you want to read more about it. But if you Google it, you have all information about this. But here's what the website says. The walking epidural is a popular alternative to the complete numbness offered by classic epidurals. Walking epidurals provide effective, safe relief without fully blunting the sensations for the woman. The medications used in a walking epidural allow greater feeling and movement in the lower half of the body during labor and delivery. One of the advantages is the ability to move promotes contractions, which may shorten labor times. Mobility is especially useful in the second stage of labor, a pushing, where the adoption of a more upright or squatting position can help with birth, which is something you can do with a walking epidural. Okay, you can actually move some. It also gives a woman more control over her body, which may improve their comfort and feeling of agency during delivery. On the flip side, having a lower dose of anesthesia may result in less relief of pain in the event of extraordinary pain. As such, women will sometimes switch from a walking to a classic epidural mid-labor. So that's from that website. Again, I'll link to it. But yeah, it's a real thing. And I know I had one. It's like, it was, these epidurals felt so different. But again, he was just really unpleasant that time. And I did not have a great experience getting it put in. So I was also just like ready to get things going. So when he was putting the epidural though, that felt like more tense and scary too. I had to like hold myself in this very, very specific position. Kristen had to leave the room, but Adam still got to be in there with me. And it felt very scary and stressful because he was like, don't move your head, don't move your head. And also felt like it took a really long time. And I was just, my contractions were really intense during this. So made the vein still really hard, but I did it. And that was, again, my first like bad experience in this birth. Everything had felt generally really good besides that triage part until this point. But the epidural worked. I got immediate pain relief. And again, it was so different from my epidural with Colin. I was totally numb. I could not move my legs whatsoever. And I literally would not have any idea I was having a contraction. Like I felt literally nothing. Whereas in Colin's birth with the walking epidural, I still felt the contractions. They were just really manageable versus like more like an early labor contractions, not like at the point when you're like 8 centimeters dilated, you know? So that's kind of the difference there, but it worked. It felt so great to have that pain relief. Again, I think epidurals are awesome. Like I'm glad I got one, especially with how it ended up actually helping things with how my birth ended up ending this time. But it was nice having that pain relief. So now I got the epidural. It's like, send in the midwife, time for your aggressive vaginal exam. And the vaginal exam was honestly uneventful. I felt nothing thanks to the epidural. So that's really great. And a midwife did this exam after all my other exams were done only by nurses. And that's significant because they actually all apologized to me about this later. And the midwives literally came to me and visited me during postpartum and apologized that they were so busy that day that the nurses only did my vaginal exams. Because they think if they had one of them do it, then maybe they would have realized I needed a C-section sooner or would have been able to help us avoid a C-section by doing some different position type stuff. So I don't really remember what anyone thought about the vaginal exam after it happened. But whatever it was they thought, they decided to order an ultrasound. And after the first ultrasound, which was done by the nurse, they weren't liking what they saw on it. They didn't tell me much. It was like very much like hush hush, like not much information given to me. And I kind of tried to ask questions. They're like, oh, we'll just see. But there was talk of bad positioning and potentially a breech baby. So soon after that first ultrasound, an ultrasound tech came this time with like more high tech ultrasound equipment. And I was just praying for good news. And she, of course, couldn't tell us the news, though. The midwives had to. So, like, I'm like, hey, what does it say? And she's like, oh, I can't tell you. She was really quiet while doing it. And then when she left, I was, you know, we're waiting for someone to come back and, like, tell us, what does the ultrasound say? I was asking Kristen and Adam, like, okay, what do you think? Like, did you see anything on the screen? And Kristen told me that she saw the ultrasound tech type in breech presentation as like the way to describe one of the ultrasound photos. So Kristen was the person who really told me like, this is probably going to be a C-section without actually telling me that. And I was really upset around all of this, to say the least. I'll kind of get more into that. But after that, the midwife and some nurses came in, and I struggled to remember who was even in the room at that point, except that it was more people and they were all, I'm laying in bed because now, you know, I'm numb and they're all standing around me, including Adam and Kristen, and someone in the room, I don't even know who it was, delivered the news that he was breech, and the position was Frank breech, which is where it's butt down, and legs like feet up by the head, and then arms are usually just kind of like out there somewhere crazy. And someone delivered that news and they say, you know, he's breech. We need to do a C-section. And like, you're going to have a C-section. It wasn't even like a, let's try this thing to like not have a C-section. And I lost it. Like, I'm not kidding. I wish I could tell you I didn't, but I did. I was truly hysterically crying. I told them no. I said, hi, you need to figure out a different way to get this baby out. I'm not having a C-section. And everyone was just really calm while I was like not calm. I also was like, you know, is there anyone who, like, is this the type of breech position where a vaginal delivery could still happen? And they told me that that day there was not a doctor there comfortable with breech vaginal deliveries, but also that this particular breech positioning was going to be dangerous vaginally. Because it was like he was in the Frank breech position, but then I also was told at one point that like his arms and legs were just like everywhere, like just all over the place. So not really like curled up much. So I get how that would be dangerous. But anyway, I was feeling angry that no one caught it sooner, and it felt like whiplash to me. Remember up until like 1 hour ago, I'd been happily having an unmedicated birth where everything was progressing great and you're handling contractions so well and we're getting so much closer. That was kind of like the vibe. So for me to suddenly be told, you might need a C-section, not just you might need a C-section, but like you must have a C-section. We're actually going to prep you for surgery right now. Was like a, what? I can't even fathom this for me, like moment. Like I was like this, I was not expecting this whatsoever. Also in Colin's birth, I almost had to have a C-section too. If you've heard that birth story, that's episode 148 of the podcast, if you want to listen to that after this one, but I almost had to have a C-section. Like I had that conversation and that was also due to poor positioning, but he was not breech, just in a really weird position that was causing me not to dilate. And that time I literally met with the C-section surgeon and we talked about through my C-section birth plan, but ultimately I didn't have to get the C-section because the position ended up moving. And I felt like a part of me was still like hoping for that somehow, even though I was being told like, no, you're having to get a C-section. And, you know, everyone's like wondering, like, was he breached this whole time? Like, did you come in with a breech baby or did he flip during labor? And the nurses were all really defending the idea that he must have flipped while I was in labor at the hospital, because everyone thought their particular assessment during their vaginal exam of feeling his head must be right. They're like, he must have flipped after when I did your exam at 11 a.m. They're like, that was literally the dialogue I was getting, which I'm also like, I really don't care. I don't want to have to hear all this right now. But that was kind of like part of it too. And I was also, and still am, which we'll talk about that more at the end, but like curious about like, when did the position change? But basically, no one there wanted to be like, quote unquote, blamed for my 15-hour unmedicated labor for quote unquote, no reason. Like that was like kind of the vibe of like, everyone's like, well, must have happened at this point. And in my video, actually, of Ethan being born, which y'all, I just love my birth video and photos so much. But the nurse that was with me voiced on behalf of Ethan, "Mommy, I'm so sorry I flipped today. Some point during labor, I didn't mean it." Like she literally says that. So that was just a thing that like all the nurses were like, he flipped after my exam. And I still don't know what I think. And unfortunately, I think I may never have a real answer like as to whether or not he was breech when I arrived at the hospital or if it happened like while I was in labor. I mean, it's just, it'll be like a mystery really because no one can know the answer to that. So it makes me sad thinking about those moments when I got this news because I felt so defeated after feeling so empowered earlier in labor. And I felt like my body was failing me again because I felt like it failed me in ways during Colin's delivery, even though I look at that birth story really positively too, but it was really hard and it felt like things weren't working. So I felt like my body's failing me again. And this is just me being brutally honest. I'm going to share with y'all really how I felt because I feel like we too often breeze over this part of birth. But I remember tearfully telling Adam and Kristen, oh, I could cry talking about it, I might cry again, that my body was clearly not, quote unquote, built to birth. I was not made to do this. And it felt ironic that the whole time I'd been listening to, you know, the birth meditations from Built to Birth, Bridget Tyler's YouTube channel. And I'm like, I'm over here saying, I'm clearly not built to birth. Like, it's so obvious here. And I was saying, what is so wrong with me that my babies won't just be in my body correctly in the right position? Why can't I just have a normal birth experience like friends of mine and like these birth stories I hear on podcasts and on YouTube videos? Like, why can't I just have a normal birth? And I was feeling so defeated. I was afraid about the C-section. I was mad at everyone and myself. And I was just really distraught and I felt like a failure. And I certainly do not see it that way now. So I want to say that I don't feel like my birth was a failure, but that was why I was dealing with those initial moments before the C-section. I think that's very normal too, when you have a big like whiplash birth thing happen. And I want to add here, let's talk about C-sections for a minute before I tell you about mine, but I think C-section moms are amazing and so brave. And I was actually born via a C-section myself, emergency C-section actually, that was really like kind of scary for my mom, but she still looks back on it really fondly. And I think there's just this stupid and wrong perception. Gosh, it's so, I really hate this perception that having a C-section is the quote unquote easy way out of birth. And let me just say, I've done birth both ways. Like I've had a vaginal delivery first before a C-section, and it is not taking the easy way out. Scrapping your birth plans, having a surgeon cut through like 6 or 7 layers of tissue and moving your organs around, moving your abs around while you're awake, your abs being separated, your like some organs pulled out and recovering from an abdominal surgery while having a newborn is not weak and it's certainly not easy and it's incredibly brave. And when I typed this, I like cried typing it, just thinking about like how big of a deal a C-section is and how brave C-section moms are. And I actually, like when I think about the time in the operating room, oh gosh, y'all, I'm so sorry I keep crying in this episode. I never felt more strong or brave than I did getting my C-section. Oh, I need to pause again, but I really haven't. Like it's true. Like I truly don't think I ever have. And I know so many other women who have had C-sections can relate to that. Like you are so strong. You're so brave. And I hope maybe you didn't feel that way when you were on the operating table, but I hope that like maybe looking back, you can see that as a time that you were so strong and brave. And I've heard it said too many times that a C-section isn't giving birth. It's having a surgery. And again, I disagree entirely. And I hope that like if you are listening or a C-section mom, or if you ever end up having a C-section, that you can still phrase it that I gave birth to my baby. Cause yeah, it's a surgery, but you gave birth to your baby. And I've always hated that statement and other things people say about C-sections and other types of birth, even before this experience. But yes, to other C-section moms listening, and to anyone who's not a C-section mom, but you have a friend who's had a C-section, think through this lens. You gave birth and you gave birth well. You laid your body on a table to be cut open because of your love and your care for your baby. And they say motherhood is sacrificial, and it so is, regardless of how you come to become a mother. But I just think C-sections are such a strong example of that sacrifice, of like you're literally starting motherhood with like this super ultimate sacrifice of like laying on an operating table to get the baby out, to keep you healthy and to keep baby healthy. So anyway, C-section moms, you are amazing, like literally so amazing. And I've always thought that because my mom had me through a C-section. My mother-in-law had a C-section with her first. Like I know people who've had C-section. My cousin actually had a C-section like a month before me with her first. So that was even like, that's been cool that we've been able to talk about like recovery together. And she was so helpful to me in those first like weeks of like with all my questions. But anyway, you're amazing. I feel like I joined a club of strong, brave, and beautiful women on the day Ethan was born because of birthing him in this way. And also just one more thing, I don't even have it in my notes, but I want to talk about, you know, C-sections account for around 32% of births in the U.S., which is a lot, right? And, you know, some people might hear that stat. And often when we see that stat, it's said through the lens of like, what an outrage. The medical system's horrible. This is so sad. What's wrong? And that's unfortunately what I think the response is a lot of the time in birth education too around C-sections. It's like, 32% or 30 or whatever number you hear are C-sections of births. Here's how to avoid a C-section is what we're told. Like we're told ways to avoid a C-section, but no details on what it's actually like. And then when the details are available, often women skip the C-section education completely because you're thinking, I'm planning for a vaginal birth and that won't happen to me because like I'm doing a home birth. I'm going to be at a birth center. Like why would I have a C-section? I don't want that. And so that's often like the mentality is there's not just as much prep unless you did have like a planned C-section, like with your first, it's typically like you're not getting much education. But again, C-sections are common. And I hope that by hearing like this part of the story I'm about to share about my own C-section, that you can see that like C-sections, that experience can actually be really positive. And I know for a lot of people, it is traumatic, like the actual C-section itself, and there can be complications and things. But at least for me, the actual C-section experience in the operating room was really peaceful and positive and pleasant. The way of getting there wasn't for me because I had like 30 minutes to like adjust to this huge change after being in labor for so long and being really tired and it not being something I was even seeing as a possibility at that point, right? Like I was almost 8 centimeters dilated. That we're talking about like pushing being a thing soon. So it's like very like whiplash for me. But I just want to say that like C-section births can be really positive and they are a high percentage of birth. And thank God that we have them as an option. Like, cause my baby needed to come out that way. And I know for a lot of other women, that's the case too. So that's just a little side tangent, but now let's talk about getting the C-section. So for me, the time between, hi, you're going to have to get a C-section to like, hey, we are going to do the C-section right now, was really short. It felt long in my brain, but it was not. There was no emergency though, which I'm really grateful for. And I know that could have definitely impacted how I feel about my C-section, but everything was calm and Ethan's heart rate and vitals and my vitals, everything looked good, my whole labor. So no one was like worried about him. It was just like, hey, like he can't be delivered vaginally because yay, surprise breach here. So that was why, you know, so no emergency, which is great. At this point I was so hungry and they quit letting me have food or water because I was heading into surgery. And so, which makes total sense, but it was like, I was wishing that I had been eating a bit more earlier in labor because I was like pit in my stomach level hungry. They gave me more meds through my epidural, which I'm so thankful I got an epidural at this point, right? Because I just, that made the transition to the C-section a lot easier because they delivered the medication, numbing, all that through the epidural. I don't understand all that again, not a doctor or nurse, but they delivered more medicines through it. And then I got really sleepy, but was still like alert-ish. And by the time Ethan actually was born, I felt very alert, but I went through some moments pre-surgery where I was like out of it and don't really remember stuff that well. But again, it was like, I'm talking like 20 minutes here. Before I went to the OR, Adam and Kristen and I all prayed together, and I don't really remember much about that. I just remember I was like, can we all pray together? And we did. Kristen got to be in the OR with us, even though they typically only let you have one support person. So that was really great. Adam obviously got to be in there with me, which, gosh, I mean, he was such helpful support, obviously, during this whole labor, but he was like a rock star by my side the whole time, helping and encouraging all the things. So they both got to be in the OR with me. And then one of the midwives got to be in there too. And she was like standing beside me with Adam on the other side. And it was cool. She basically was just telling me like what was happening in the birth, because there was a curtain between me and my stomach. And I obviously was like, my head was laid down. Like I wasn't going to be like looking up to see anyway. And this feels kind of crazy, but I had a C-section birth plan that was actually just copy and pasted exact same thing that I had from Colin. And it's a backup birth plan because I was not planning for a C-section, but this time it's crazy because it got put to use and it felt crazy to me in the moment. I like literally remember registering it, the same birth plan I had gone over with a surgeon 2.5 years prior. We had that same birth plan out for the C-section and he was going over it like, okay, this from the plan we can do in your C-section, this we can't, because I thought I was going to have a C-section. Like I met with the surgeon for it. And I was so close to it. The paperwork was signed. And then that doctor left and was like, I hope you can move your baby into the right position and we don't see each other again. And that's what happened. I did not see him again. And that C-section plan did not get used. And then now it did this time. And I had that same kind of meeting with this new doctor where she and I were talking about like what can happen from my birth plan, what can't, which was great. And I loved the doctor who ended up delivering. She was so, so, so nice. And did an awesome job. So then transitioning to the OR though, Kristen and Adam both had to put on those like OR outfits. So everything's really sterile. And y'all, according to my photo timestamps, to show you how quick stuff happens, they put on their outfits at 5:21 PM. And then Ethan was born at 5:52 PM. So that's just like so fast. And that's not even the time of like the actual C-section. That's the time from like us moving towards it to him being born. So I was actually just in the clothes I was wearing previously. And then they put a hairnet over me too. They told me before we went in that there would be Bluetooth in there, like for playing music, and that I could hook my phone up to and play whatever we wanted, which was really nice and peaceful. And we played my worship music birth playlist. And Adam knew that I wanted Ethan to be born to the song, The Blessing, which is also the song Colin was born to. So that was ultimately the song kind of playing on repeat during this like 10 minutes that was the C-section. So the C-section itself was so fast. They started it around 5:40 based on the photos Kristen took and those timestamps. And he was born at 5:52, like I said. So like literally like 12 minutes. I had no idea it was that quick. That's something you don't really hear people talk about much. And obviously if you were getting like a scheduled C-section, there's a lot more like prep and stuff beforehand at the hospital. I just had that. I had that too in my own way, but I'd already been there a while, you know? So during it though, like I said, our music was playing. Adam was right by my side holding my hand. Kristen was kind of behind me taking photos on her phone. And the anesthesiologist, who I had that bit of conflict with before, also took some photos. And both the photos that both of them took are just so beautiful. I love the photos from this birth so much. I will share some of them on Instagram so you can see them because I haven't shared any yet. And I'll also put them in the blog for this episode. And like I said, the midwife was there narrating everything that was happening. It felt really peaceful in the room. Like there were a ton of people in there operating. I was getting to know what was happening. I was like not feeling anything, but was still aware of stuff, you could say, but it wasn't painful. And I did feel like a weird pressure when he was pulled out and born. Like it was like I could feel something leaving my body, but again, zero pain at all. And I actually have a video of him being born, like right before it happens, where the midwife says, okay, baby is coming out right now. Okay. You're about to feel lots of pressure. And then the doctor says, happy birthday. It's so crazy having it all in video and photos. I've like looked at them, watched them so many times. I don't really have that with Colin's birth. So that's like another special thing about this one is that I have all these like photos and videos of things happening. So meeting Ethan, let's talk about that. So he came out, he cries immediately. They took him to get weighed and checked. So I did not get to do immediate skin to skin, which I get that that stinks. I got to have that with Colin. I didn't have that this time, but by 6:05, maybe a little bit sooner, I'm just going off photo timestamps. We did get to do skin to skin. So it's like really close to immediate. So just know that's possible with a C-section for you to like get your baby if all is going well to your body quickly. And oh my gosh, it was so crazy meeting him. Like lots of happy tears. I was just so thrilled. So during pregnancy, it was hard for me to like visualize Ethan, which I think is true for like, regardless of if it's your first baby or second, it's hard to like visualize what they're going to look like, right? All I could think about though for this time was what Colin looked like as a newborn. So like when I would try to visualize him in pregnancy, I'm just like, all I saw was baby Colin. And so it's hard to think beyond that. And as much as I loved Ethan already during pregnancy, right? Like I loved this baby in my tummy. I was like so confused by how the heart would expand with more kids because like Colin, I just like adore him. Like, how am I going to have room in my heart for more? I know it sounds crazy or weird maybe to some people, but like I know some of you guys can probably relate to that. But I realized it all in that moment. Like when he was given to me, I was like, of course, this is what you look like. It is so great to meet you, beautiful boy. And I felt my heart totally expand. And I loved him in a way that was like the same, but also different from how I love Colin. And it really was just like such a beautiful moment, such a peaceful moment. It really was like, of course, this is you. Like, this is my baby. Like, it's so great to meet you. And later, like, so, you know, I held him immediately like the skin to skin wave. And then there was another point where the nurse was kind of like holding him over me. And his foot was in my face. It's a really sweet video. It sounds weird, but like she's holding him over me. His foot's like right by my face. And I was crying and I was just saying, I love him so much. And that's like me kissing his sweet little foot. And he's just so cute and peaceful there. So I really love that video. And then, so like that, like I said, he was born to the song, The Blessing. Oh, and I should share this part too. Kristen told me this after the fact, cause I did not remember this, but while the song, The Blessing was playing, everyone was singing it, which is really cool. She said that like her and Adam both, that like literally everyone, which there's a whole like surgical team in here, right? But somehow they all knew that song and were all singing along to it. And that was one thing that like when I asked Kristen after birth, like, what are some things that you think I might not remember that you feel like I need to know? That was one thing she said, was just that like, I know it wasn't what you planned, but like that room was so peaceful and you could feel God's presence. And it was like angels singing as he was born, of like everyone just peacefully singing that song, like even the doctor delivering him. So it's like, yeah, I don't know. I thought that was really cool. Just a really peaceful environment is what I would say about the OR room. And again, I wasn't like fully, like I was a little out of it, but still awake. So I wasn't like, that's why I don't remember everyone singing even. I did not remember what song he was born to until I was told that. Anyway, though, so soon after all that, Adam and Kristen were already back. And then I got moved back to our original delivery room. I should add too, that when Adam actually got to hold Ethan before me, I should have said that, but like when he was first born and then he was taken to like do weight and make sure he was good, they had Adam hold him and then Adam brought him to me. So I mean, that's really special too. But that was just a random thing I thought about. So we got back to the room though, the original delivery room, and we got to breastfeed immediately when we went in there and that all went well. At that point, Kristen took our first blurry photo of me with Adam and Ethan, our first little photo of the three of us. And I was just feeling so in love with him. I know Adam was the same. We kept talking about how cute he was. He looked so different from Colin. At least we think he did, which like at least from when they were both born, which felt kind of crazy of like how different they looked. Like his hair's really light brown, and had a lot less hair than Colin. And then we also were both just like, oh my gosh, his head is so perfectly shaped, which sounds funny to say, but that's the thing with C-section babies, is like because they did not go through the birth canal, their heads are just more like the shape that a vaginal birth baby would eventually become. That was just funny to us. We're like, his head's like perfectly shaped right now. But anyway, me and Adam were just like obsessing over him. And yeah, just like enjoying getting to connect with him. I was still totally like not aware of any of my C-section pain at this point. The epidural was still active for me. So it takes a while for that to wear off. And yeah, at that point already, I was feeling more positive about the birth experience. So I just want to add that too, that like I had that like breakdown of like, this is not what I wanted. I don't want this. And then I was already feeling better about it at this point. And that was something too, when Kristen and I were processing my birth after, she said that like her perspective was like, yes, I did get really upset about like, you have to get a C-section news. And Adam was actually someone who kind of helped me like adjust to, because I felt so like, no, I don't want that, figure out another way. And then he like, you know, kind of held my hands, was like, Elizabeth, it's going to be a C-section. And I still remember that like after that kind of adjustment of like, okay, I hear you. Kristen's review was that like, once you adjusted, you seemed like all in on the season. Okay, like tell me what to expect. Let's go do this thing. And then it was like, you know, like I said, done like 20 minutes later. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about postpartum, and I'm going to save my postpartum stuff, even the like at the hospital stuff, for another episode that I want to just talk about like postpartum experience like I did last time. But I have a few things I want to share now, and then I'm going to share some of the answered prayers from Ethan's birth. So I have like, what is it? 4 things about postpartum. So first thing, that was just unexpected C-section thing. So I was so excited to eat something after birth. I remember my first meal postpartum with Colin being so excited and wonderful. And I was like, yes, I'm ready for that again. Only to learn that with C-sections, you cannot eat for a really long time after, which makes sense. Like you just had a major abdominal surgery. Like you can't just start eating. Like everything is kind of like in a weird place and your body has so much adjustment to do. But I was like literally in the postpartum room being like, all right, what am I going to have to eat? I'm so excited. I'm hungry. And I found out pretty quickly, I could not eat anything until the next day. Keep in mind that he was born at basically like 6 o'clock and they're telling me you can't have anything until like midday the next day. So they were going to give me ice first and then you get some water and then juice and then maybe crackers and then real food. And when they gave me the ice, I mean, y'all, I was just like, my mouth was so dry. I was so hungry. The nurse was like cautioning me, like, take it easy on the water, take it easy on the ice. No matter how thirsty you are, because it can lead to like stomach problems and vomiting. Like that's what she kept telling me. She's like, be careful with this. But I was so hungry and thirsty. I did not listen to that advice well. And so I had water and juice too fast. And basically like that whole first night I spent just like throwing up on and off. And it was really miserable. First night at the hospital was just a lot of that. And I was also really exhausted. And so was Adam after being awake so long. So that's like a very non-glamorous part of birth is like, yeah, like I was feeling awful in that way. And it was all because I was hungry and like trying to eat too soon. And then I really did not get to eat until the next day around noon. I ate real food. And before then I ate a little bit of crackers at some point. So that's one thing. Second thing about early postpartum, so the morning after he was born, your epidural wears off and they're going to give you strong pain medication after having a C-section. So usually with a vaginal delivery, at least my experience with mine was that like, they just gave me some ibuprofen and maybe Tylenol. This time I was getting ibuprofen, Tylenol, and a narcotic. And that morning they gave me that first narcotic. And I can't remember what it was. It's something that started with a G, but I absolutely hated it. It made me feel weird. I felt so out of it. I was literally seeing things. My vision was messed up. I was hallucinating. My mind was like delayed in responding to things. So like someone would ask me a question and in my head, I'd be like, okay, this is what I'm trying to say back. But my mouth like couldn't answer it. It was so weird. I was like that for hours. It was truly awful. And I got to the bottom of what was going on because at first I was like, is this a reaction to like the C-section? Like, I don't know. But I asked the nurse, I'm like, what medicine am I on? Can you spell it for me? And I Googled side effects of it and it was everything I was experiencing. And it actually made me want to swear off the like stronger pain medicine at all. And at first I was like, I just want ibuprofen, Tylenol after that. I was like, I'm very like, that was such a bad experience. And then my cousin actually, who had just had a C-section, like we were texting and she was like, no, you like be sure they send you home with something because you will end up feeling like you need it. So then the next day, or maybe later that day, I can't really remember, but we tried a different pain medication and that one worked. And that was ultimately what I got. And I took home with me and took it for like the first, probably like 7 days postpartum. But yeah, that first one was truly an awful drug trip. Like I felt so unwell. I felt like I couldn't even take care of Ethan. So again, another like not very exciting part of like the birth experience there. But yeah, a little thought here, like C-section moms. And if you have a vaginal delivery too, like take the pain meds they offer you. And for C-section moms, get them to prescribe you something to take home besides the Tylenol and ibuprofen. But then I would say like, try to work out which one's the best pain medicine for you while you're at the hospital, because you need something that works well with your body. And that first one they gave me did not work with me. Okay. Third thing I want to talk about is early recovery. So I was so discouraged by my surgery recovery at first. And for the first few days at home too, it was just like, I felt like I was never going to be able to do normal things again. Like I was so not mobile. Standing was hard. Walking felt impossible. I could not even sit up on my own. So if I was laying down in bed, I needed help being pulled up. If I coughed or sneezed, it was like intense pain at the C-section incision site. And I literally had feelings like I will never be normal again because of C-section. Like that was what I was like telling myself in my head. I knew nothing about C-section recovery. So I'm Googling all the things, reading all the things. And for about a week, it felt like this is so hard. Like moving's hard. I can't get out of bed. I can't even really go up and down the stairs. I still remember like I was told like, don't, like I basically stay in our bedroom. We have a 3-story house. So I went to our second level and basically was staying there. But then once a day I would go up or down the stairs and it was like so painful when I did. So anyway, I felt that for about a week. And then around really like 12 days, maybe 2 weeks postpartum, I felt a lot better than I think I even did with Colin's birth. So it's like the recovery was so intense. And I would say I did a really good job of resting in those early days of like staying in bed, staying around the bed and letting other people take care of things, not lifting anything heavy and just trying to like not be very active, but then still a little active, which is a weird like, you know, tension with C-section recovery. Like you need to move some, but not too much. But yeah, when I got to more like 3 weeks postpartum, I felt better, like just really normal. I even like at, what would that have been? At like 3.5 weeks postpartum, I ran a little out of necessity, running to go get something, in taking care of a toddler. But I also started doing like postpartum, ab exercises, like breathing stuff and stretching for C-section recovery at about 10 days postpartum. And I did a long walk about 10 days postpartum. So I started doing not like for real exercising. I did not start doing that till more like 5 weeks. Maybe 4 weeks. But in about 10 days, I felt good enough to do some of that kind of stuff. So anyway, the recovery, I would just say from my own experience, which I know everyone's C-section recovery is so different. Just Google C-section recovery stuff and you'll see that like there's a wide gamut of like experiences. But the recovery was insanely intense and hard and first, and everything felt out of whack. My organs felt off. I'm having a lot of pain. You're still bleeding like you do with a vaginal delivery, which you might not know, but that happens with C-sections too. But then I felt like I started feeling normal again really quickly. And now I am, what did I say, I'm 5 weeks, 6 weeks almost postpartum. And I feel pretty normal. I still have pain at the incision site some, and it feels kind of numb in that area to the touch, but I'm able to exercise normally. I've run some already. I've gone long walks. I can lift my toddler, all those kinds of things. But early on, it does feel like, oh my gosh, this is so much. And all the recovery feels long, but then it's over quickly. So anyway, I'll talk about that more in another episode soon. But that was just a little thoughts on recovery. Okay, and the fourth thing I wanted to share about postpartum. So Colin meeting Ethan. So my mother-in-law, who I said was taking care of Colin this whole time, which we were at the hospital for a few days, like 2 extra nights after, I think. But she brought Colin to the hospital to meet Ethan 2 days after Ethan was born and on the day where we were being discharged later. So we were being discharged that evening, but she brought him that morning. And so grateful for her that she took care of it. I knew that like I was able to just be really present with what was happening at the hospital because I knew Colin was in good hands, which is just something you really got to think about with the second kid, having backup and backup and backup. Like I had my sister as like a backup person, my friend Jenna, my friend Gracie, like all these people that are like, if I need you for this particular scenario with my child, with my labor, like, can you help? So anyway, I'm glad it worked out though for Jan to be just taking care of him. But she brought Colin to the hospital and I was so excited to see Colin. Adam was too. We missed him. And it still felt like weird having two kids because I'm like, Colin's still my baby though. It was just like, it was so weird. And I was so excited for the two of them to meet and for like the four of us to be together as a family. And Colin was so sweet meeting Ethan. Lots of snuggles. He told him he loved him immediately. And then one of the first things he did was he like grabbed Ethan's little tiny, tiny foot and he said, oh, so cute. It was just really sweet. So anyway, I'll maybe share more in my postpartum episode about some things we did to help prepare Colin for being a big brother. But like over a month in now, and even quickly after, I'd say Colin has adjusted well overall. And some of the things we did during pregnancy to like help him know what to expect with being a big brother and things like that, I think really helped. And we definitely have had hard moments too, because that transition is hard. But like generally speaking, I'm like, it's gone really, really well. And them meeting was just like the way, like, I mean, me and Adam were both just like, this is so wonderful and beautiful, like seeing the two of them together. So that is it. That is Ethan's birth story. And to end the birth story, Ethan is actually with me now in my office finishing this recording. And it's so funny. Hopefully you can't tell this from the audio, but I've actually sat down set and stopped recording this 4 or 5 maybe times today. I've been working on trying to record this since like 9:30 a.m. and now it's 1:30 p.m. That is life when you are solo with a newborn. But every time he's been napping, I've been recording some, and then he wakes up when we do playtime and feeding and all that. And now I'm like, I want to finish this. And so he is joining me for his awake time right now to finish this. But anyway, to kind of close us, I have a few different things I want to share, but I'm so proud of his story and I've enjoyed sharing it with you. And I feel like it really was 2 different births put together. I think I said that earlier, but it's like there's the hours of unmedicated labor all the way when I was like, you know, getting close towards that transition time, and then a separate experience of the C-section. So it feels like in my brain, like 2 different births where I ended up with 1 baby. And I also feel like I've experienced so many different birth things between this birth with Ethan and my birth with Colin. So I kind of made the note of it myself, but I want to read them to you. But like, I was induced. I've also done going into labor naturally. I've done Pitocin with no pain medication contractions and also with an epidural at the end of that labor. And then I've had contractions occurring naturally. I've had extreme back labor the whole time. And then I've had mainly abdominal labor the whole time. I've had it where I felt like I was suffering during contractions, then where I felt like I was crushing it during contractions, laboring at home, laboring only at the hospital, having my water broken during Colin's birth, never having it broken during Ethan's, 2 different types of epidurals like we talked about, 2 different quote unquote bad positions for baby to be in, 1 breech, and then 1 where it was head down, but just not ideal. And then I've had the vaginal delivery, the C-section, going just 2 days past my due date. So basically like a quote unquote on time baby. And then also a baby born at 41 weeks with Colin, a really long labor, a labor that was more like around 17 hours, and then birth center and hospital birth. Well, actually 2 hospital births, I should say, a birth center midwifery care, and then a hospital midwifery care. I'm probably forgetting something, but man, I've just experienced a lot. And I'm like grateful as someone who like has always been pretty interested in birth and really enjoys like birth things. It's fun to me that I've been able to experience like a wide array of things about birth that I can now get. So anyway, in Colin's birth story episode, though, I focused on sharing answered prayers as the format for that episode. And in that one, I shared 10 answered prayers during Colin's birth experience. And so I feel like I can't end this episode without sharing the answered prayers in Ethan's birth too, because there are so many. And even though I shared the story in like a different format, I still want to share them. So 1, I got to go into labor on my own. That was such an answered prayer. Like I said, that was my biggest prayer my whole pregnancy. Surrounding birth was that and having a healthy baby, but I really wanted to experience labor and I got to do that. 2, I got to labor at home unmedicated and for like quite a while of time. And now I know what that's like. And I got to watch my body be really powerful doing that and got to really experience birth that way. And I know in hindsight, it can be like, well, don't you wish you had just known he was breech sooner so you could have avoided labor, right? And just had like a scheduled C-section. But from my perspective, that was something I wanted so much that I actually don't wish that at all. I'm like glad I got to have that labor experience first. 3rd thing, I got to be unmedicated until like 7 dates in feeders and 90% of face, like I said. And again, that was like important to me after my contrast with Colin's birth of like watching my body be so powerful in that way. And then 4, I got to be powerful and feel empowered in a different way that was not an answered prayer, but having a C-section. And it is still an answer to prayers in that I have a healthy baby and that the C-section was calm and peaceful and not a bad experience itself at all. And ultimately, that it also happened at the right timing, like before I was pushing or anything like that, so that it wasn't an emergency. And then 5th way God answered prayers, my water didn't break early, which I mentioned that earlier, but if I had had my water break earlier, it could have been bad. It could have led to me pushing with a breech baby or having an emergency C-section. There's so many different ways it all could have ended up, and I'm grateful for the way it ultimately did. 6, I never used Pitocin, which I don't think I said that earlier, but one of my other like birth goals was just not having Pitocin at all because, again, I had a bad experience last time with it. So not having to use Pitocin at all this time was really great. 7th thing is that they found out he was breech. And I can feel all sorts of blame for things from this birth of like, oh, I wish I'd known sooner. Or like, when did it happen? All the questions, right? But ultimately, I'm like so grateful that we knew he was breech before I got to that pushing phase of labor. 8, that Ethan did not get GBS, and we actually ended up stopping my group B strep antibiotic early because of a C-section, because C-sections are one of the other things besides like long labors and your water not breaking and things like that, that can prevent the baby and protect them against group B strep. And then my ninth answer to prayers is, like I said, ultimately you want a healthy baby and a healthy mom after delivery. And I'm so grateful that, you know, I have precious little Ethan over here cooing next to me as I record this. Okay, so I did this same thing at the end of Colin's birth story, but I want to read you something to close this episode. And this time, it's from the poetry book, All I See Is You by Jessica Ehrlich. I think that's how you say her last name. I will link to the show notes, but it's a poems and proses on motherhood. And she has a bunch of different books, but this is one of my favorites from her that's really resonated with me when I read it this time in postpartum. And I feel like it relates to this birth story as well. And regardless of where you are in your motherhood journey, I think this poem will resonate with you. It's called Just You Wait and See. All right, so I'm going to read it holding my book up here. Just you wait and see. You'll hear those words a bit, mama. In fact, you probably already have. You'll be reminded that if you think you're tired now, just you wait and see. If you think you're sore now, just you wait and see. If you think you're busy now, just you wait and see. There's so much you'll be told, and a lot of it is true, but there's so much they don't say too. They'll tell you birth is painful, but did they tell you about your strength? The strength you always had that could bring a life into this world and shortly after leave you breathless. They'll tell you it's the most rewarding job in the world, but did they tell you that they feel lonely some days too? That some days a rain cloud followed them around and they mourned for more than dishes, washing, and burnt cloths. You'll wonder how it can be so hard when loving them comes so easy. They'll tell you that you'll lose yourself in motherhood, but did they tell you to stop looking for her? It's still you, just a new version, reborn as a mother. She's coming to find you, so stand still for a moment. They'll tell you of how fast they grow, and it's true. One minute you're their whole world, and the next they're venturing down the hallway, and room by room it becomes bigger. It's sad when they leave versions of themselves behind, but be proud, mama, they are going places. They'll tell you that they hope you have a good baby, one who sleeps through the night maybe. Maybe you'll be lucky. But did they also tell you to just surrender? The pain of fatigue is haunting, but they need you right now. It's not because you didn't follow some schedule. It's because you're their home. They're all good babies. They'll tell you about the worry and the guilt, how some days it'll consume you. But did they tell you mom guilt seeks out the good moms, the ones who have so much love that they are winded by it? Mom guilt will lie to you. So remember, you are enough. You are more than enough. They'll tell you about that first smile, about how precious that moment would be. But did they tell you it happens when you need it the most? The fourth trimester can be tough, but almost as if planned, that smile will save you. They'll tell you it's a strain on your relationship, and it can be. It's not easy. But did they tell you that it won't always be this way? One day you'll have your nights back again, the house will be clean, and the rooms will be silent, and your heart will be in pieces because of it. It's a beautiful, bumpy road where the best isn't just yet to come. The best is yesterday, today, and tomorrow. That's motherhood, and it's magic. Just you wait and see. So that's the poem. Again, it's from the book All I See Is You, and I felt like that's kind of where I'm feeling in this like place of motherhood, of like this feeling of just you wait and see all these changes, especially being a mom the second time through. I can relate a lot to this. So wanted to read that to you guys. And now this super long episode, I had no idea it was going to be this long. Oh my gosh. I was thinking like an hour, but thank you guys for listening all the way to the end. And I hope this story resonates with you, impacts you in some way, and thank you for holding space for me to record it and just to share vulnerably. And I hope this imperfect recording over many hours of my day of this imperfect birth story resonates with you somehow. I'd love to hear your thoughts here, how this was different or similar to your birth stories. You can send me a message on Instagram. I'm at Elizabeth McCravey. And I'll be sharing some photos in the blog with this episode and also over on Instagram from the birth experience. So would love for you to come interact with me over there. So thank you so much. And I'll be back next week with another episode that's not birth related or pregnancy or motherhood, but just business related. So I hope you'll join me for that too. Again, thank you so much for listening. Hey, thank you for listening to the podcast, friend. I so appreciate you being here. That just flew by, didn't it? If you want more Breakthrough Brand, you have to join my free Facebook community for podcast listeners, where you can connect with like-minded business owners and go deeper on what you learn on this podcast. Go to ElizabethMcCravey.com/Facebook to request to join the free group. I cannot wait to connect with you there. Again, that's ElizabethMcCravey.com/Facebook to access the group. Also, if you love this episode, leaving a rating and review for the show wherever you're listening or sharing this episode with a friend is a great way to support this podcast. I appreciate it so much. Again, thank you for listening, and I'll be back next week with another episode.